Hello and welcome to the Senate Interim Committee on Education and Workforce Development. We have a couple of waylaid members who will be here momentarily. We're going to begin today with continuing looking at this community college concept of 2 years of community college for qualified Oregon high school graduates, including homeschooled graduates who meet the qualification set in place in Oregon. And in my former life as a journalist, we had a phrase, advance the story, and that's what we hope to do today, is not just rehash what we've talked about in previous hearings, but to continue this discussion. And to help us do that, we have our State Treasurer Ted Wheeler here and his team to talk about how this fits in with the vote coming up in 2014. Mr. Treasurer.
Good afternoon. Chair Hess and members of the committee, my name for the record is Ted Wheeler. I'm the state treasurer. Thank you very much for inviting me here today to give you a very brief update on the Oregon Opportunity Initiative and to discuss how the Oregon Promise dovetails with the Oregon Opportunity Program. First of all, just a quick travel into the Wayback Machine. The Oregon Opportunity Initiative was referred to the November 2014 ballot through Senate Joint Resolution Number 1, which was passed by the legislature during the last full session. In a nutshell, it does two things. It sought to increase access and affordability for Oregonians who wanted to participate in either community colleges or the university environment, with a particular focus on lower income and lower and middle income students. It would do that by increasing student aid. It had as a secondary goal, but an equally important secondary goal, of incentivizing and growing vocational and technical training programs at the community college level. That was simply an acknowledgement that not everybody wanted to or wants to or necessarily needs to attend a college or a university, but everyone does need a basic set of skills. It would achieve these goals by creating a growing permanent endowment dedicated to these two main purposes. Since we last met on this subject, there's been a lot of data out there to support the need for the Oregon Opportunity Initiative and other ideas like the Oregon Promise. I'll just refer to two briefly. The first came last summer through a seminal study conducted by Georgetown University at their Center for Innovation and Workforce Development, where they concluded that by the year 2020, nearly 70% of the nation's workforce would require advanced education. They further drilled down state by state, and they looked at the state of Oregon and concluded that Oregon is one of a handful of states. I believe we were number 7 on the list, if I remember correctly. Oregon was one of the few states that will be disproportionately reliant on advanced education because of the structure of our economy, meaning our focus on high technology, our focus on manufacturing, our focus on healthcare and other professional services. So the need for this kind of advanced education is expected to grow. The second study I want to refer you to came out just weeks ago. It came from the state's own economists, and it showed that our workforce is bifurcating. We're starting to see lots of jobs that require significant education and skill sets, and then lots of jobs that don't, that tend to be lower wage, more service-oriented jobs. So we know that we will have the need for the workforce. We will have the jobs that have high wages. The question will be whether Oregonians will fill those jobs or whether our employers will seek the employees from out of state who do have the skill set. The campaign related to the Oregon Opportunity Initiative is underway, and I don't need to get into that here except to say that it's off to a very strong start. Assuming the passage of the Oregon Opportunity Initiative will be back before this committee and the legislature as a whole in 2015, we'll be seeking financing under the terms of the Oregon Opportunity Initiative. Concurrently, the Higher Education Coordination Commission has been looking at reforms of the student aid program. We in the Treasury are monitoring those reforms. We are participating in that process, and we will follow with interest as they look at how science, technology, engineering, math, how arts and creativity, how accountability can all be improved in our system of student aid. Some of the other ideas that they're looking at, and I want to be clear, we are not in a position to endorse anything today because we want to honor the HECS process as it unfolds, but we've heard ideas like the Pay It Forward program. We've heard the intriguing idea, which you're discussing today, proffered by Chairman Haas, called the Oregon Promise. What I want to make clear today is that the Oregon Opportunity Initiative, should it pass, those dollars can be used to support programs like the Oregon Promise. So we see the Oregon Opportunity Initiative as a very important fundamental stage insofar as what we're providing is a source of permanent growing funds that could then be dedicated towards whatever idea the Higher Education Coordination Commission decides is the best and highest and most accountable use of those funds. So that could be the proposal that you're discussing here today. And I just wanted to make clear that there's not only not a conflict between the Oregon Opportunity Initiative and the Oregon Promise proposal being discussed today, but we see this as sort of a fundamental necessary part of that process. I think I'll stop at this point and ask if there are any questions of the committee. Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. I appreciate you engaging us on this, and we wish you success on this campaign, and you know, when we look at this idea is really what it is, concept, which is not original, by the way. California did this back in the 60s, and it was famously successful, and a lot of people think that's what birthed the Silicon Valley and the aerospace industry, you know, a generation or two ago. So how do you see this playing out, though? The measure, should it pass? What's the next step after, if there's a successful passage a year from now?
Assuming the ballot measure is successful in November of 2014, we'll come back to the November 2015 legislature and we'll take a look at the financing options that are available to us. We'll probably make a recommendation to the legislature, but really our intention is to work over the next year and a half very closely with all of you to figure out what you think are the most viable routes and how best to go forward. So we see this more as a back and forth and an active partnership as opposed to us dictating anything to anybody.
Right. Okay. Mr. Savaggio, you're here for aid and comfort?
I'm here for questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Both. Appreciate it. Thanks, members of the committee and Chair Hoffman.
Gerald Hamilton and Barbara Dudley, you want to come up together?
Chair Haas and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Gerald Hamilton. I am the interim executive director of the Community College and Department of Community College and Workforce. I've been asked to briefly speak on a couple of items here today, and first about a call that was initiated by this chair's office to the U.S. Department of Education regarding help funding the Oregon Promise. Around the concept of a possible Pell waiver. On the call, we spoke to Undersecretary Jeff LaPelle, who works with higher education policy. Their input was that the Pell funds are awarded to individual students and follow them to wherever they attend school. A waiver to change that methodology of Pell distribution would require federal legislation, and they had difficulty imagining such a change. They were not particularly positive, although intrigued about the concept. I've also been asked to update you about the Oregon Opportunity Grant, and you just heard from the treasurer that the to that end, the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission has established a work group based on a charge from the Oregon Education Investment Board to review the Opportunity Grant. Its directives are in question form, and pardon me while I read them, but is the state financial aid, as it currently structured, adequate prepared to propel us to 40-40-20? Is there a different allocation method that would promote the ability of underrepresented students to access financial aid? Should state financial aid be redesigned to influence or reward success and completion? What should the relationship be between state and institutional financial aid? What data and date collection mechanisms are necessary in order to adequately track and report progress towards degrees over time? And finally, how should state financial aid be redesigned in light of the bonding possibilities that would be available if voters pass the legislation referral of SJ1? The work group is under the leadership of Larry Roper, a commission member, and has met once to organize. Its timeline is to conclude a final report to the OEIB in March of 2014, with an interim report to OEIB and the legislature in February of 2014. It's proposed to do a comprehensive review of the Opportunity Grant and how it is as a, how it lays and what its purpose. In closing, any effort to provide more students access to post-secondary education promotes the state's 40-40-20 goal. And for the community colleges to meet the goal of the middle 40, additional access is very, very critical. So with that, I would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Let's go to Barbara Dudley.
Okay. Thank you, Chair House and members of the committee. I am an adjunct professor at Portland State, as well as a policy advisor to the Working Families Party. And it was one of my classes, a capstone class last fall, that resulted in the Pay It Forward proposal that came to you for a vote in the last session. I want to talk about your proposal, the Oregon Promise, the community college proposal, as well as Pay Forward and some of the other proposals that are on the table for increasing access and affordability. But I want to start by reminding us that since the current recession started, just the one in 2008, Oregon's spending per student in higher education has dropped by 43.6%, more than all but two states. To put that in dollar terms, in 2013, the state contributed nearly $2,700 less per student than in 2008. In that same period, tuition has increased by 27%, reaching $8,000, $9,000, even $10,000 at some of our four-year schools and near $4,000 at our community colleges. And lest we forget, at the same time, real wages have been dropping, and unemployment has hit recent graduates especially hard, nearly doubling since the beginning of the 2008 recession. In other words, we're driving our college students deeper and deeper into debt, an average debt of now of $26,000, with little prospect of paying that debt off in a reasonable amount of time after graduation. And even more alarming, you have a growing number of young parents, well, parents in their 40s and maybe even in their 50s, still carrying student debt of their own and looking at their children in high school and wondering how they will ever help pay for college for those students. When college graduates carry this large amount of debt, when their debt-to-income ratio is this high, they cannot buy cars from the local car dealer, they can't buy houses, they can't start families, and they certainly can't think about being entrepreneurs. They take the first job that appears on the horizon for them, and it's often as a barista. The whole economy suffers as a result. We are not going to get to the Silicon Valley that way. Clearly, something needs to change. And you all know that, or you wouldn't be sitting here. The governor and the legislature set yourself some challenging goals with the 40-40-20 formula. But we need to recognize that those who are most challenged by those goals are the students themselves. We're telling them that the path to economic success involves getting a college diploma, but we're putting such a high price on that diploma that for a growing number of young people and their parents, the equation is not convincing. The more stories they hear of family, friends, neighbors who can't work their way out of their student debt, who go into default, who have to fight off the debt collection agencies beating on their doors and calling them in the middle of the night, the less likely they are to take the risk of going to college. We are already seeing enrollment numbers dropping at most of our universities. And if you discount the ever-growing number of international students, that decline in enrollment increases significantly. And while it may be good for the university's bottom line to attract foreign students and out-of-state students, it does not help us meet our 40-40-20 goal, and it does nothing for the long-term economic or civic health of our state or our own young people. Obviously, we've had revenue challenges like many states, but especially here since 2008. Funding for higher education has been easier to cut than most other budget items because we rely on the students to pick up the difference by going into debt. But we have reached the breaking point with that approach. It's not good enough for the legislature to struggle as hard as we did in the last session to keep tuition increases down to only 3.5%. Keep the increase down to 3.5%. rather than going up to 5%. We need to be bringing tuition down significantly and quickly, and that means we need to find new sources of revenue to increase the state's contribution to the cost of higher education. We need big new ideas. The Treasurer's Oregon Opportunity Initiative is one such idea. Pay it forward. The proposal the PSU students brought to you is another such idea. Free community college is another big idea. And in fact, the three of them together would constitute what the HEC chairman just the other day called a whopping big idea of the kind that could make a real difference in our in reaching our 40-40-20 goal. I can imagine a scenario where all Oregon high school graduates can attend their first 2 years of college for free. But we have to make that available not just to recent graduates, but to all the non-traditional students who populate our community colleges, because that is who needs to be reached and trained as well. And where should they go on for a bachelor's degree, they could share the cost of their second 2 years with the state. So the first 2 years would be free, yes. The second 2 years, they could share that cost, covering their share through a pay-it-forward income-based plan, which would pay back into the higher education fund or the opportunity fund a fixed percentage of their income after completion of their education. But the obvious question is, how do you pay for such a plan? How do you pay for the portion of the cost of community college currently covered by student tuition? How do we come up with the upfront funding for pay forward in order to support the universities while we wait for the students to the student contributions to accumulate in order to create the regenerating fund? Everybody is looking to the Treasurer's Opportunity Fund. Everybody. But we need to remember the original impetus for the Treasurer's idea was the fact that only 2 in 10 eligible students that apply today receive an Oregon Opportunity Grant. And when they do, it's worth less than $2,000 a year, which is half the cost of tuition at a community college. And we mustn't forget that tuition is only a part of the student's cost of attendance. There are fees, there are textbooks, and the cost of living to be covered as well. The whole point of the Opportunity Grant was to help low-income students cover those costs, but it's falling woefully short in that task. We cannot abandon our commitment to making college affordable for low-income Oregonians or for the non-traditional students who are not fresh out of high school. For example, the unemployed 45-year-old with a GED who decides to go back to community college to get retrained. We need to cover their costs as well. Assuming that the voters approve the Oregon Opportunity Initiative's bonding scheme next November, the state can issue bonds to start the Higher Education Opportunity Fund. And assuming the Treasurer makes smart investments, as he is inclined to do, and we don't hit another recession and interest rates stay low, there will be enough money to increase opportunity grants or to cover community college tuition or to help kickstart the Pay Forward program. But it will be many years before there are enough funds to do all of the above, which is to say that we need to talk about revenue. And frankly, I can't think of a more likely and more appealing way to raise new revenue than the community college concept that you have before you. We read almost daily of employers in this state and throughout the country decrying the lack of a skilled workforce. Community colleges are a major part of our workforce development strategy, and most business people I have talked to see the value of investment in community colleges. At the same time that tuition and student debt have skyrocketed, the tax contribution of businesses has been shrinking dramatically. If we went back to the corporate tax rate of the 1970s, when we had free community college in California and close to free here in Oregon, the additional state revenue that would be available would be as much as $2 billion. If there were ever an opportunity to raise revenue, it's around the idea of increasing access to and graduation from community colleges. We owe it to our young people, we owe it to future generations, and frankly, we owe it to our state to take these bold steps to change the downward spiral of debt, of unemployment, underemployment, and shrinking college enrollment. We are not heading at the moment toward our 40-40-20 goal. I would urge the committee to take this challenge very seriously and take a hard look at the proposals you have before you to make college both accessible and affordable. And as you do this, the one most important thing I can say is talk to the students. Engage them in this process. They are the ones who are having the experiences now that are so different from the experiences I had and most of you had going to college 30 years ago, 40 years ago. I went to law school for $500 a semester. I torture my students with that every chance I get. we owe it to them to bring back those kinds of opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you. And also, since you started, we've been joined by some PCC students. You must have known we were talking about you. Barbara, thank you for that and keeping that in perspective. I think from talking to you before that even though you work at Portland State, you are still a champion of getting students access, affordable access to community colleges so they can become a welder or a medical assistant or whatever.
Or whatever they want to become.
I think you might have not given us your name when you started, so we need it for the record.
Barbara Dudley, sorry, with a B, with a D, not a B.
That's right.
Yes, and I would also like to say that some 40% of the graduating class from Portland State came from community college. So there is this pathway from the community colleges to a four-year degree as well. So, yes, I think there should be opportunities, whether in high school or community college or graduating from a four-year school, to become an employed and useful member of society. Absolutely.
Questions of our panel here? Thank you both.
Thank you.
We'll revisit this again. Okay, that's advancing the story on community colleges. And at this point, I would like to bring up Representative Nathanson and Jim Mabbitt to update us on House Bill 3401, which we passed in the last regular session on regional ESD service delivery, and there's a report that you're going to give us, and I know that some of the school districts up in my backyard, Beaverton, Hillsboro, have already taken advantage, if you will, of this new law. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from District 13. Mr. Mabbitt has our report for you. I'm here to just set the stage. In a nutshell, our task is to look at how services to schools have been delivered for the past 30 years or so and how they might be arranged differently for the 21st century. Thank you.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Jim Mabbitt. I'm the executive director of the statewide Oregon Association of ESDs organization and a member of the task force that was formed by House Bill 3401. I want to make kind of an opening statement here congratulating the legislature on passing Senate Bill 529 and House Bill 3401. Now, I can tell you that I don't believe that every single individual associated with ESDs or school districts out there would agree with me. However, the passage of those two bills have prompted the strongest, most robust conversations about regional service delivery that I've seen in this state in my 35 years in Oregon education. So I want to thank you for that. The members of the committee, we have one representative from OSBA, one from COSA, one from OEA, one from OSEA, one from ODE, and one from OAESD. There's your alphabet soup members. And then we have four legislators, Senator Beyer, Senator Cruz, Representative Nathanson, and Representative Wisnett. We have, I think, a committee with a broad spectrum of experiences and beliefs, and we've enjoyed our work on that committee so far. The group's charge, according to the legislation, is to explore options for optimal regional education delivery systems and to propose legislation related to the findings of the work group. We have met twice so far. We brainstormed a full list of topics to study and have narrowed that list now down to five, and they are: review possible delivery models, a focus on technology delivery, including online courses, textbooks, and collaboratives already working well in some regions, a focus on technology with respect to non-academic and business functions, examine barriers to service delivery and propose solutions, and analyze possible cost-effective collaborations among education entities, including looking at successful models within and outside of Oregon. We'll be meeting again in December and again in January, and we will be requesting a February session bill, and our understanding is there is a possibility of such a bill, to extend the life of the group through the 2015 regular session to allow for in-depth study on the five topics. The language will include having committee services to provide staffing to the work group. It is our intention to report again to the 2014 legislative interim committees and bring possible legislation to the 2015 session.
Thank you. The report is in everyone's packet. It's been being distributed. It's available on OLS.
Yeah.
Okay.
It will be shortly.
And we do have some language to actually recreate the task force for next year to develop some legislation. Jim, we had earlier talked about six regional delivery systems, ESDs, whatever. They're combining to four or six or eight. Is that still an option?
Chair Haas, there have been conversations around the state of various configurations of what might happen with ESDs. The whole notion of this committee, though, was to talk about a regional service delivery system, whether it involves ESDs or not. Whatever that system needs to be to provide the best possible service delivery for the students of Oregon, that's what we want to see. And so it was with that kind of overall thinking that we brainstormed the ideas for all of the topics. I can tell you that within the topics we have here, if that's something that the group wants to look at, it can certainly fit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the things I just would, I guess, convey to you, Jim, and the task force that we recreated is, for me, one of my interests in making this more efficient is to do just that, make it more efficient while at the same time making it less expensive and shrinking that percentage of K through 12 that goes to sort of the administrative part of the ESD deliverables, if you will. And so I hope that when you look at these delivery models, that that's always sort of on the brain, that what these models, the idea is, it's not just to change things around for change's sake, but to make them less expensive so that we can redirect some of that money back into the classroom.
And Senator Haas, I want to say that you know that you and I share that goal. And in fact, a report that I shared with you a couple years ago from OEESD had exactly that concept in it. I want to broaden that a little bit, though. We're looking to eliminate that duplication amongst ESDs, school districts, community colleges, universities, all through the state, because we know there's duplication, and we want to make sure that the maximum amount of dollars are going right into the classroom for our students.
Yeah. Well, I know, and I don't want to speak for Beaverton, but their superintendent says that they're saving more than $1 million in opting out of part of their ESD services because they could spend the money more efficiently than what their ESD is, and that's their claim.
Right.
So, comments from some of the task force members.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I fully would expect that from Beaverton. It's a matter of economies of scale, but. Mm-hmm. I do want to say that this isn't an ESD task force. This isn't a task force to draw a map. This is a task force to develop a system of service delivery, and we are defining education in the broadest possible terms as far as the functions of schools. It's not just what's in the classroom, it's the functions of schools. And we've had some very robust conversations at this point, and I think we can actually come up with something that might actually make things better, which is a rare thing for the Legislative Assembly, but we might actually do it this time.
I disagree with that last part of that. Any comments from the other task force member? Well, thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
We've got to get this boy a sense of humor.
All right. We're going to move on now to aspirations to college programs and Portland Community College, which has been a leader in this area. And I know that Representative Glake is here. You want to kick things off with your team? Or
Four section.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I know.
Chair Hass and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to testify this morning, or this afternoon, I should say. There are a number of supporters here in the room, so I'm going to be brief in my comments and just take you back to this last legislative period we had. The governor had put forward provided $70 million in strategic investments in education, from PK, STEM education, dual credit, K-12 mentoring. At the end of the session, I requested $2.5 million for aspirations to college programs for competitive grants through the Community College and Workforce Development. Those funds were not funded. I repeat, were not funded. So I'm hoping to bring this back as a pilot project for the remainder of the biennium. We'll be requesting $1.5 million aimed at our community colleges, targeting programs that provide access to success for first-generation low-income college students. The goal is to leverage our state investment by partnering our local business community, the philanthropic community, and local governments to provide low-income students a chance not only to go to college, but to meet the promise of the 40-40-20. So this effort is actually very personal to me. I am a first-generation college student. Actually, I'm the first one to graduate from high school in my family, or the only one. And so this is really the kind of program that would have fit me when I was starting out. I am a PCC alum and very proud of that. I don't think I'd be here today if it wasn't for the community college experience. And so briefly again, as I said, I just want to leave you with this notion. If we're going to meet the promise of the 40-40-20, we need to think differently about how we're providing critical services to a new generation of students in an increasingly global world. It's an economic imperative that the next generation of Oregonians has access to college and to the workforce training skills to develop and help their communities to thrive. So, as I said, it's a very personal kind of effort, but I think one that you can appreciate will really have some impact throughout our state. I do want to acknowledge that we have a number of PCC students here, and if you don't mind, you want to stand up and We just want to thank them for their support and for coming to see us today. Thank you. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions of me before we get our other supporters up?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. We have a team coming forward to give us some perspective on. Let's start off with Whitney Grubbs and John Wyckoff to set the stage for us what we're talking about here today.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Whitney Grubbs, and I'm the Chief of Staff for the Oregon Education Investment Board. And as you know, last session, the Oregon Education Investment Board put together a package of strategic investments that it developed after looking at the key outcomes that we think are important for our state to be able to reach the 40-40-20 goal. Mm-hmm. And in that package of investments was included money dedicated to thinking about how we provide guidance and support for building post-secondary aspirations for our students. In the process of developing the strategic investment package, we really looked at evidence and data from around the nation about what is important and what can really move the needle on these outcomes for students. And a lot of really compelling evidence pointed to the fact that one of the most predictive factors for students of whether they're going to go enroll in post-secondary and successfully complete a degree is whether or not they believe when they're in middle school that they're going to go to college. So there's this entire body of evidence that really focuses on the idea that by simply helping students and their families understand that there is a pathway for them to college, we can actually change the trajectory for those students. In the course of our work with this body, the legislature, in getting the strategic investments passed, we were often asked to prioritize among the strategic investments. And the governor was very clear, and the OEIB as well, that they were all priorities. The strategic investment package was put together really as a way to identify those places on the continuum that among all the different activities and things that we could fund were the most strategic, most critical levers that we think could lead us to 40-40-20. And so the fact that this piece did not get funded wasn't because we didn't believe it was a high priority, but just as a result of the limited resources at the end of the session. So I'm fully in support, and I'm excited to have you hear from the supporters of one particular program that fits within this investment.
Thank you. John?
Great. Thanks, Senator Haas, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Wyckoff, Legislative Director for the Oregon Community College Association, and just here in to voice our support for sort of including the colleges in what was the governor's original budget from last session. And I think for the colleges, this is very having access to this program would very much enhance our mission of serving students who are often not served. This is something that we believe very strongly that the colleges are good at. This is something where they're innovative, and you're going to hear more about a very innovative program from Portland Community College. That's a great example of the kind of work colleges can do, can scale up, can use as models for the other colleges, and having access to something like this would make it easier to do that and to use sort of these best practices.
Can you give us a refresher? We don't have the legislation in front of us on what this would do or would have done had it been funded.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, and I might turn to you because you guys, this was your program.
Sure. And you give it a start, or you want?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, this would have been a grant program for colleges that are doing that currently in the K-12 exists, that were funded at K-12 to take programs like PCC's Future Connect and be able to scale them up or to use them as examples for other colleges to be able to use and to really support those kind of programs that take students who need wraparound services and the kind of services, coaching, that sort of thing, to get through a college education for those students who have more barriers than a lot of the students we meet. And I think it's really critical, and from our perspective to meeting the state's 40-40-20 goal, in that if we're going to get to 40-40-20, we have to do things that we're not currently doing. We have to take students that are already college-bound and get them through faster than they're getting through, or we're not going to make it to 40-40-20 by 2025. We're going to have to take students who got some college and left and didn't get a degree or certificate and get them back in to get degrees or certificates that will get them, you know, that give them the skills to have real jobs that lead to real careers. But the other piece that is really fundamental is getting the students in who probably would otherwise not have. Students who have, you know, are low income and have other barriers and need real attention, or they aren't going to make it kind of to that finish line for their degree. And having access to a grant program like this that would help fund programs like that and create examples for other colleges, we think helps move us toward that goal.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, so the way we had framed it up originally was to provide funding for a competitive RFP process that for which community colleges, universities, school districts, nonprofits, or any sort of consortium thereof could apply to receive funding to build out these programs that are specifically designed to educate families and students about their pathways to college. And they take a lot of forms. There are some really cost-effective, innovative strategies around simply giving families access and support in filling out the FAFSA forms. There's a lot of programs that are bringing students and families onto college campuses from very, very early grades in order to get them sort of familiar, and other programs that are more intensive around really ensuring that students are mentored and sort of walked through the door to college so that they know that they're going to be able to do it. And so that was the process. And really with these strategic investments, they were meant to be proof points, really looking at if we do these focused activities that have a strong evidence base, we can move the needle and get better outcomes for students than we have in the past. And so that's the sort of theory of action.
Okay. Questions for these two? Thank you.
Thanks.
Mark Sansucci, Denise Frisbee, and Kelly Love Geiger on aspirations to college programs.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Senators. My name is Mark Sansucci. I am a city councilor in the city of Beaverton, and I'm happy to say that I was very supportive of Beaverton's contribution of city funds to support the PCC Future Connect program's expansion in Washington County. What I'm here to do is, number one, to support the work of the legislature in expanding access to community college and secondary education all across the state. But I want to specifically explain why the city of Beaverton and why I particularly wanted to support the PCC Future Connect program. Beaverton every year dedicates a certain amount of money, between $250,000 and this last fiscal year about $350,000, of our funds to a variety of social service programs that we think are of benefit to the community. Most of those funds are from the revenues that are shared from the state to the city, primarily from liquor and alcohol taxes, tobacco taxes, and we set those into a separate category and use them for a variety of purposes. But each year, between $250,000 and $350,000 goes to a variety of programs. PCC approached us to consider supporting the Future Connect program, and to my mind, this was a very simple yes to make because of the nature of the program. I'll talk a bit more about that in a second. We committed $100,000, which, along with the shared fundraising from other sources, PCC Foundation and others, was enough to fund 2 years tuition and coaching for a cohort of 50 students, Beaverton residents, from a variety of Beaverton school district schools, homeschools, and other situations. I would love to see us be able to support more. The PCC was able to scramble and find 50 people on very short notice who were qualified and appropriate and ready and willing to participate in the program. But we feel pretty confident there are hundreds more in our community alone who would benefit, who would qualify for this program. One of the reasons that I am particularly excited about Future Connect and why I personally worked quite hard to make sure that Beaverton invested in this program is that it does more than simply help individuals, in my opinion. It does more than simply provide workforce training and skills development. It does those things, but it does something more. And it's something that I think is really important to communities like Beaverton and like many, most in the state of Oregon, where the providing an educational opportunity to first in family, to low-income or disadvantaged or people of different cultures who don't have a history of secondary education has a tremendous magnifying effect in that you're benefiting not just that student, but that student's family, that student's siblings, their friends, people that they know who maybe had not considered that there was an opportunity or benefit to them from getting a secondary education, but by seeing somebody that they know, that they respect, that they trust, that they have affection or love for, get that education, the idea spreads. It becomes an element of the culture. And I think that anybody who's a student of American culture over the last 20, 30 years might recognize that the culture of education is challenged in this country. Education is valued a little bit less, I think, than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. Certainly when I was approaching my college years, it was an expectation that if you could, you would go to secondary education. If you couldn't, you would look for financial aid. I think we've lost some of that. And by providing opportunities for first-in-family students to get a higher education, we are spreading the culture of education in our community. And to me, that's sort of an intangible but extremely important value that this program can offer that is very difficult to find from any other program because of the focus on people who otherwise don't come from that culture of education. So Beaverton, I will do everything I can to make sure that Beaverton continues to contribute to the Future Connect program and that, that additional cohorts of students on a year-by-year basis can have this opportunity. I'm one of five city councilors in Beaverton. I don't get to make the decision by myself. But I do know that our resources are limited. We cannot provide an inexhaustible amount of funds to support this program. So anything that the city can do, that the county can do, that the state can do, that the federal government can do to help with this kind of program is going to be immensely, and in my opinion, almost immeasurably beneficial to the community at large just because of that magnifying effect that access to a secondary education for first-timers offers that is very difficult to provide in any other way. So I look forward to hopefully hearing that the legislature agrees that this kind of program is an important program and deserves funding from the state as a contribution to local efforts and private efforts as well, and I'll be happy to do anything I can to help with that, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Councillor Sansusi. I personally, as a Beavertonian, want to thank the council for helping get more kids to college. And it, you know, revisiting the earlier issue here on community colleges, when we look about how to finance that, we're kind of looking at three areas. One is a waiver on Pell Grants. One is possibly reorganizing the opportunity grants the state does with or without this ballot measure next year. And a third one is this sort of public-private philanthropy partnership like the one that you engaged through Future Connect. So
I have no doubt that all three of those would be successful in their own ways.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Kelly Love Geiger, and I am a Future Connect College Success Coach. I wanted to speak to you today to tell you about the work that I do with low-income and first-generation college students. I work alongside these students who are attending college for the first time. These students are hardworking and dedicated, and I feel blessed to be a part of their college journey. In my time with the Future Connect program, I've seen students coming into college straight out of high school, nervous, intimidated, and unsure how to even approach navigating the complicated issues of financial aid, testing, registering for classes, and attending those classes. Because Future Connect works with local area high schools, I'm able to meet with students before they even graduate from high school. In this work, we work to create a close connection and also work on issues such as how will they pay for school and what classes they will enroll in. In these high schools, I begin building that key relationship. This relationship helps students feel confident when they walk into campus for the first time in fall. It keeps them on track from enrolling in classes to persistently attending and completing their degree. This relationship connects students to college and gives students a safe relationship that they can turn to whenever they run into challenges. I'm a coach to students who need one. Many students have told me that in high school they thought that college simply wasn't an option. They needed to support their families, earn an income. They didn't know how to pay for college, and frankly, they didn't know if they were college material. But after one summer of working together and over the course of the last fall term, I know that all of my students are prepared, confident, and ready to excel at the college level. My students participate in summer workshops and take a college survival and success class from me during their first term. The next term, I teach a class on career guidance and assist students in selecting their career paths and callings. The combination of these two supports, along with our financial assistance, helps students to persist, succeed in school, and obtain their degrees. Right now, I'm working with 50 individual students from Beaverton. Kasaya Tosh, the student sitting next to me, is one of the students on my caseload. Kasaya is a perfect example of a student who I feel has all the right stuff. She is intelligent and motivated, and she has faced struggles in the past, but is working very hard to succeed in college now. I want to thank you all again for letting me speak on behalf of this program. I'm fortunate to be a part of Future Connect and to work with such amazing students during this incredibly important part of their lives.
Hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Kasaya Tosh, and I'm a freshman, a part of the Future Connect program at PCC. As a child, I grew up in a two-bedroom apartment with four kids and my single mother. I was a happy kid, don't get me wrong, but as a child, when you're in that kind of situation, it becomes all too easy to not realize what you have going for you. And that feeling lasts. In high school, I loved learning, honestly. I worked hard and received good grades. I even took some really advanced classes. But it seemed college was still not a very tangible option for me. Not only did I not have the monetary means to go to school, I also couldn't stand the very thought of leaving my family and going to college. It was overwhelming for me. I was still in that negative mindset, and though in many ways I was ready for school, there were still far more ways I kept telling myself that I wasn't. Even though I worked hard, I still had no idea what was going for me, like all too many high schoolers in this world. That's when my college career counselor had me apply for this program called Future Connect. And I can say with complete honesty and certainty that that was the greatest advice that I had ever gotten. The decision to apply for Future Connect directly influenced my ability to continue with my education and be in college this year. I was able to start my future instead of putting on the brakes like my family had to do before me. Future Connect is, to me, hardly about the scholarship money, though. That's not what makes it so amazing. Even the resources are only great at best. It's been about the support that I've gotten going through school. I'm even luckier than most, as I have the opportunity of having Kelly as my Future Connect coach. The program has offered me college guidance classes that I get to take with other kids from this program, kids like me. I have learned how to be a college student and stay organized without just being thrown in the deep end, and I've been given support during my stressful weeks as a college student so that that old helpless and hopeless feeling doesn't surface. My coaches help me out and answer questions so that I can be confident in earning my education. But most importantly, Future Connect has shown me how to become a better student and person and realize that a lot of hard work and grit will get you the opportunities and hope if you value yourself, your aspirations, and you look around to realize what you have going for you. I'm proud to say that I have my education, future, and my Future Connect family. I didn't think I could master it all before, but now I'm a full-time worker, I'm taking care of my five siblings, and I have all A's in all of my courses. Future Connect has helped me keep all of that into balance.
Thank you. What are you, What are you studying?
Currently, I'm just going for my Associate's of Science.
Great.
But
congratulations.
Thank you.
Keep it all together.
Yeah. I plan on becoming an aeronautical engineer.
Awesome. Okay. Any questions for our panel? Thank you all.
Thank you.
I think that wraps up our testimony on this. Many thanks to PCC, which has been the workhorse of our higher education system in the last 10 years. About 100,000 students, about the same amount as in all of our four-year universities combined. And given the recession, the two that we've had in the last decade, I just don't know how a lot of students would have survived without PCC and just doing what they do in a nitty-gritty sort of way without the funding that should have been there. So, and yet somehow still being innovative on programs like this. So way to go, PCC. We will try to be more responsible partners as the economy improves here in the coming years and with more focus on the need for training and higher education out of high school. So thank you, and thank you for coming down here today. We have one small item left of business here, committee, and that is a primer on the three committee bills that we will be introducing as a committee for January. And Administrator Donovan, do you want to give us a brief summary on what those are?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The committee anticipates introducing three bills for the upcoming February session. Just by procedural rule, the committee is actually limited to no more than three committee bills during the upcoming short session. So there's a memo that's available in the back of the room and that's available in the online legislative information system that gets into a little bit more detail. But the three bills that the committee is looking at, one is a bill tailored towards the community college funding program that we heard testimony about earlier today. That's going to be one of the main bills that we look for. The second measure that's going to be considered is a fixed cost Bachelor of Arts or 10K BA bill, some sort of study program that will look at keeping kind of a fixed cost degree in order within the state. And the final measure is going to be an omnibus measure. So kind of a grouping of a number of technical technical provisions or changes. Those are enumerated here in the memo, and I'll go through them very quickly. We've received a request from the HEC, the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission, to talk about interstate agreements. The HEC needs to regulate online offerings, online courses, and so the Western Interstate Commission that we belong to has a draft provision called the State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement. The commission is interested in entering into that, and so we're going to hear testimony about that to see whether or not the legislature would like to delegate that responsibility. As we heard testimony about today, a second item is the recreation of the House Bill 3401 task force that's related to regional educational services delivery. It's a little bit of a policy thing, but the task force expires on the first day of the legislative session, and so we can't extend it. We have to recreate it, and so that will probably, I believe the committee anticipates doing that. We've received a request to potentially address renaming the State Board of Higher Education and maybe changing the membership in light of some of the changes that happened with the passage of Senate Bill 270. This happened in the last legislative session. It dramatically altered university governance, and so the Higher Education Coordination Commission has asked that we change and update the composition of that board. And then also, the Higher Education Coordinating Commission has asked that the window for universities, regional and technical universities, true universities as they've taken to calling themselves, be shortened. They have a window to apply for a institutional board, and they want to shorten that time frame, so the committee will consider that as well.
Okay, so there's the last two short sessions I guess that would be 12 and 10. We did have an omnibus education bill where there are four or five different education policies that were changed, and the criteria to get into that bill is that it cannot be controversial. And that was, I think that's why both of those Christmas tree education bills passed overwhelmingly in those two short sessions. the community college funding bill is a technical study, and the as is the bill that is the $10,000 bachelor's degree, which Senator Canope might want to speak to, is as well. Any comments on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today we talked, or heard, I should say, a lot about the cost of education, and that's certainly one side of it. And I've heard a lot about we need more money for grants and loans and things like that. But the other side of that equation is the expense of an education. And we need to look at and be innovative in the way we are approaching college, payment for college, and what that actually costs. And it seems like that as government invests more and more funds, whether they're at local level like the Beaverton City Council or the state level like the legislature for K through 12 and community colleges and higher ed, or at the federal level, costs just continue to skyrocket. So we need to look at the cost equation, not just trying to figure out how we can get kids more loans or loans at a lower rate, or which are good things, but it would be great if they left school with no debt whatsoever and had the opportunity to go pursue their dream unhindered by the debt. And so that's what the whole idea behind the 10K BA is about, which is creating that low-cost alternative that they can rely on and they know that's there. So if they want to access it, they can do that, or they can access a more expensive degree depending on what they want to do.
Fair enough. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, just be forewarned, there may be some member bills end up in this committee as well. So
there almost always is. So
just.
Okay. Well, thank you all for attending today's hearing. Thank you, committee. With no other business before us, we are adjourned. Okay. Adjourned.